This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For free trial and to get 10% off, visit squarespace.com/android and enter offer code Android at checkout. A better web starts with your website. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 190. It's a lot. For Friday, June 20th, 2014. If I hesitated on Friday, it's because it's not actually Friday. We're recording this on Thursday for various reasons. Deal with it. Hi, how's it going? I'm Phil Nickinson, host of the show, editor of AndroidCentral.com. With us this week, we have Jerry Hildenbrand from West Virginia.
Howdy, howdy, folks.
And who else do we have? Andrew Martinick in Seattle.
You had one choice. One choice left. Hi, it's good to finally be back after 3 weeks in a row missing, unfortunately. That's a travel of duty, I guess.
We totally remembered that it had been that long. I'm kidding. No, what threw me off is I looked down here, and you know how Google always changes things in Hangouts. And suddenly I'm twice as wide. The box my face is in is twice as wide. I've heard my face is slimming down. Thank you for everybody who's lying to me. And my box is twice as big now. That's weird. Is your box twice as big?
Oh, yeah.
Mine's
wide and you guys look square until you pull up on the screen, then you're widescreen.
That's kind of cool. Anyway.
Kind of jarring.
Yeah, so what's going on? I'm just back in town, by the way. Again, week 2 out of 3 for travel this month in a row. Nobody's impressed. At all.
I'm busy playing with wide and square boxes.
I was just glad this wasn't week 3 out of 3 for travel for me. So
yeah,
I actually got to stay home for a week.
I was in we can just get it out there. I was in Chicago. Everybody thought I was going to Chicago to see the Moto 360. And I don't know why, because Motorola is not the only company in Chicago. No, I was up there to spend the day with Gogo, the in-flight online Wi-Fi internet company that, you know, does things in planes. It was pretty cool. I was there with Mark Wim, came with me. Mark does a lot of the videos you see, especially WP Central. And so they like showed us how they do things, and we were there with a bunch of av geeks, airplane nerds, and it was pretty cool. It was a lot of fun. So I'm gonna write up something on that over the weekend, have a nice little feature for you guys to read hopefully next week. I think it's pretty cool. I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, we'll find out if it's pretty cool when we read about it.
That's true. So that's what I was doing. Andrew, let's just launch into it. Andrew, like, did all the things yesterday.
I ran around Seattle more than I've run around Seattle in a while.
I was chilling on an airplane like this. Just lean back. I was in good shape. So you know, let's...
I was at my desk like that.
Yeah. You were working kind of hard, too.
Yeah, okay.
So
just take it.
Let's start with the big one. The Amazon Fire Phone. Amazon has now made a smartphone, and I'm still, my little brain's churning on this. I'm trying to decide if it's good. I'm trying to decide if it's bad. So Andrew has actually seen it. Andrew has actually tried it. Let's talk to Andrew about it. Give me like the 2-minute version of what the hell is this thing.
So it looks a lot like all of the leaks that we saw. It basically looks like a Nexus 4, but it's skinnier and taller. It has glass on both sides, and it really does have 4 front-facing cameras. Each one has an infrared light. So yes, there are lasers to help it find out where your head is and also where your eyes and mouth are, so that when you look at the phone and then you move the phone, the phone knows exactly where your face is in relation to the front of the phone. And so the interface can change and do really interesting things while you're throughout the interface and games and apps and everything. Aside from that, this is just Fire OS, just like we've seen on the Kindle Fire tablets. It's just scaled down for the phone. Because it's a phone, we have maps on there, more productivity features in terms of course, now we have a dialer and messages and a new interface for notifications. And so there are some tweaks there. But the big thing on the software side is this thing that Amazon calls Firefly, which they just keep doing this fire thing for some reason. That's their brand. But Firefly is kind of like Google Goggles, but really, really good. And continuous, so you can just point it at anything and it'll recognize whatever it can in it. So names and phone numbers, pictures, products, barcodes, anything, and it just creates a history of all the things you've ever scanned, and so you can always go back to them later and say, oh, what was that phone number that we scanned, you know, 2 days ago, or what was that music that I listened to or that TV show that I watched. And of course, you can buy it on Amazon, listen to it in Prime Music, watch it in Prime Instant Video. Beyond that, it's kind of just a regular smartphone, which, of course, those are some very non-standard smartphone things. But other than that, it really just, it's shaped like a phone. It has smartphone internals. It has a regular camera. It has a standard display and everything like that.
Why do I want this?
That's the question. And I nobody's guess, really understanding that quite yet.
Conversely, the other question I'm asking myself is, why wouldn't I want this? Like, what is it about a, quote, Amazon phone that seems so bad to those of us who know and love Android just the way it is now? Like, why is this any different?
That's kind of the funny thing. It's like a continuation of the Kindle Fire argument, where we say, oh, if you're really into Amazon, then the Kindle Fire is kind of your way to go because it's just a good solid tablet and it's cheaper. The Fire phone is priced the exact same as any other flagship, $199 on contract, $649 off contract. And Amazon's kind of aiming this at, you know, we made a phone exactly for our customer base because we know what our customers like, and our customers like, you know, ease of use and, you know, all these simple things. Jeff Bezos pointed out several times to the presentation, you know, why don't other phones just do this? This is exactly how you would expect them to work. And he has a point there on some things, where when you go to silence the phone, you can just, you know, by default, you can silence it for 3 hours and then let it return to unsilenced after that. You know, that's not a normal setting for most phones. You know, when you tilt the phone to look at things, you can actually look behind them with this 3D interface.
That was kind of cool.
So that's kind of the thing where it's like, yeah, those are a lot of cool things, but is it enough to make you drop the current way that you think about how your phone works and move to a completely different system? Because this is completely different. There's nothing about using a Fire phone that's at all intuitive if you've used any other phone.
I did like the watching your video. And in fact, by the way, I watched your video with my daughter this morning because we're flipping around on CNN and they had some on. She's like, Dad, that looks cool. I want one. I said, oh, yeah. Well, Andrew saw it yesterday in Seattle. He lives there. Oh, cool. Can we watch it? So we used Chromecast to watch it while I was still laying in bed.
Oh, there you go.
It's very cool. But yeah, like the weird, like, twist it one way to, you know, to open a menu on that side, twist it the other way to open a menu on that side. I mean, and peek around, like, that was kind of cool.
And it's interesting because it's not a way that you interact with a smartphone right now. We're used to a lot of swipe gestures and, you know, multi-finger gestures and things like that, you know, the evolution of multi-touch. And this is more of a thing where, you know, I talked to a VP of software for the project, and he was basically like, we designed everything so that it's meant to be used with the gestures without touching the screen, moving your head, flicking your wrist, and things like that. We made sure it all worked that way, and then we included touch as a backup option if that's what you want to do. So you can turn off all of this dynamic perspective 3D stuff if you really want to, but it's designed to be a first-class citizen in terms of interacting with the phone. So all of Amazon's apps follow this three-panel idea where you have the main view, and then you have a panel that comes in from the left and comes in from the right. And that can just be done just by flicking the phone quickly. It comes in from one side. You flick it the other way, it disappears, and the other one comes in. And they're kind of doing all this kind of, I guess, glance type stuff where if you tilt the phone just to the side a little bit, it'll show labels for the buttons. So you'll see if there's a plus button, you know, the information underneath will say add or new or something like that. You tilt the phone to the side on the home screen and it shows your carrier and battery information at the top bar. It's kind of doing a lot of interesting stuff, but at some point I have to think, you're going to get tired of moving your wrist in your head so much just to do normal things in the phone that you might go back to relying on touching the screen.
Jerry's being awfully quiet, and he kind of warned us, I think, on Google Plus that he wasn't going to have anything to say until he plays with it. But I don't care. I want your uneducated opinion, Jerry, of what you're seeing and hearing so far.
Number one, the best part about it is seeing all this Amazon Fire Phone absolutely sucks. That's a piece of crap. Look at all those gimmicks sent from my Note 3. If this thing said Samsung on the back of it, everybody would love all this stuff. And that's something we all need to move past. We need to try, at least I need to try this before I tell you if it's good or bad. But I'm the type of guy who, if you want to try it and you think it works, good, because it may work. And if it works well, what's the problem? Yeah, it doesn't have Google Play, and that's a sticking point for a lot of people. And I like my Kindle Fire tablet without Google Play, but I don't need any apps from Google Play to enjoy my Kindle Fire tablet. A phone may be different. I really, really want to wait until I try this thing to give any judgment. But my first gut call is it's going to be a very niche product that probably works really good, and the few people that buy it are going to enjoy using it, while the rest of us just talk about how it sucks while we type away on our gimmick-filled Note 3.
The interesting thought about the 3D being a gimmick is it's obviously doesn't show up in pictures whatsoever. It actually makes the screen look kind of weird and like you missed focus on the screen when you're taking a picture of it, because it has this, it's mostly looks like the screen is deep underneath the screen rather than it popping out, but some elements pop above the screen a little bit. And so it looks really weird to see in pictures. And even in video, it can't really be done because the phone has to see your face to know where it's at. So if you're holding up a camera in front of your face, it can't see your face. And so that's inaccurate too. So it really needs to have a clean shot of your face. And they talked about having 120-degree wide-angle cameras and all of this different stuff and the IR lasers and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But in my time just using it, not with a camera in front of my face, it was about 95% of the way there. But, and you really notice that extra 5% where you can tell it loses track of your face for a second and whatever's on screen jumps a little bit because it doesn't know where you're at. And if that can't get nailed down to 98%, 99%, then that's going to start to be annoying enough that you turn it off.
Okay, I saw just that in your video. Now I understand what I was seeing. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, the screen would just, you in your video, what we saw would be, wow, that looks like it's an actual depth perception on that object. And then everything would shift by a couple pixels and it would go back to looking sort of flat. So I get what you're saying, and that's because the sensors weren't being, you know, they weren't seeing my face because I'm watching through the internet. So I get how that works now. It makes a little more sense.
Yeah, you try to show it on video a little bit, you know, you just move back and forth, and they show the example of the 3D maps having, you know, the space needle sticking up. And in some ways, that kind of stuff is a gimmick, just in the same way that on Google Maps, I don't use the two-finger swipe down to get, like, the bird's eye 45-degree angle view, because that's just not useful. I don't care how tall the building is. But they showed it in maps where you have the little compass in the bottom left corner. All you have to do is kind of tilt the phone, and you can see underneath the compass to see what screen is under there, or what street is under there, rather than swiping the screen across. Now, it's kind of weird because Jeff Bezos talked about, oh, it's so intuitive. Obviously, if you wanted to look under something, you would just go like that and you would look under it. But
why do I want to look under something?
When we're dealing with a digital world, it's kind of the whole reason that you have this digital interface is that you don't have to be constrained by having layers of things and having to look under something. And maybe you could just design the interface in a different way where the compass is never obstructing the street names. You know, that would be kind of a cool idea too. So it kind of seems like a weird thing that is going to try to help people. Oh, it's so intuitive because it's just like the real world works. Well, you know, the digital world doesn't have to work like the real world.
Here's how the real world works. It works with apps. And that's, I mean, Amazon sent out a press release saying, hey, we've got 240,000 apps now. And that's no small number, but it's still not one-to-one with Google Play. And actually, the other big news of the week is Amazon's finally going to license out to BlackBerry, which I think, at least I know I've been saying, I'm pretty sure you guys have too. That's something that they probably should have done a long time ago with CB10, right? Or with a CB10, with BB10. because, you know, if you're going to run Android apps, awesome, but you need a good, legit place to get them from. So, I mean, it's not like they aren't out there, but it's not one-to-one, and that's still kind of the biggest differentiator, right?
And Amazon's in this place right now where they're reaching out to specific developers, just like they did with the Fire TV, to get them to use this dynamic perspective stuff and get interesting little things, get their three panel look going with it and use the gestures and use all this stuff. When in reality, it's just sometimes they just need any app. It doesn't have to have all this crazy 3D stuff, and they're not getting those, you know, apps in there.
I think what Phil said, especially when you bring BlackBerry into the mix, that really hits hard home the difference between the App Store and Google Play. You've got the really great apps, the apps that everybody loves and everybody uses. They may be available on Amazon and in Google, but as the versions get newer and they get updated, they get Google services injected into them. They get your contacts and, you know, maybe maps or maybe play games. They get these services that Amazon can never have. That means that Amazon, the versions either drift apart, or the ones on Amazon just get left at version 1.3 and never get updated because they can't get Google services. That's an issue, a real issue.
I can't speak for like real actual developers, but I can tell you my own anecdotal experience. Because we have... The Android Central app is in the Amazon App Store, right? I thought that was an important thing to do, so we did it. And we did it a long time ago. Now, Amazon actually takes a couple days and goes through your app. I'm not sure how closely they go through it, what kind of compatibility thing they do. But the last time I tried to update it to send in an update of the app, they kicked it back, saying, oh, hang on, this new version doesn't work with the original Kindle Fire. We need you to fix that. And I'm like, I'm not going to like make our developer spend time on something that, hey, by the way, all of like 200 people have downloaded on Amazon. You know, spend time worrying about this legacy device. Just not going to do it. And they wouldn't take it. Now, that said, you know, it's still easier than Samsung's App Store was. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like we know it works on Android. Actually, we're going to start using probably some Google Play services. I imagine cloud messaging is part of that, right? So as we roll out the notifications, that's something else I assume we would have to change. To get it resubmitted to Amazon. So it's going to be more work for developers, right? And I guess for the big apps, and especially for the ones that are selling it, it makes more sense to do it. But for us as a free app, I just have no desire at all to spend more resources on it.
And it's no longer just Android apps running on the Amazon devices. And you said why. You have to make sure that an app is compatible with an old legacy device. Nobody's going to do that. I think they all should. I think we should. But I understand why nobody's going to.
Right.
And that means that it's no longer just another Android app.
And the interesting thing that the end result here is the way that Amazon's dealing with developers, trying to get the big names, you know, they kind of have to do that right now simply because it's not that they have, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and Gmail, or, you know, whatever. It's not like they have the big names and they just need these fringe apps now. It's they still don't have the big names to fill out a basic app catalog. So in their attempt to just get the big names just to fill out what would be on a standard home screen, they're kind of, you know, not really tailoring their policies to expanding the App Store, but more, you know, get a few good apps, a few dozen good apps. And it's kind of turning something like the Fire Phone into like a glorified feature phone, basically, where you're going to get what's pre-installed and you're going to install some games and a couple of apps from the App Store and just call it good. That's because that's basically what's available.
But Amazon did great with some games on the Fire TV.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I hope they can maybe coerce those same developers to building games designed for the Fire Phone that use the dynamic perspective.
Yeah, and they showed off a couple of them that were really cool that use all of the head tracking and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's going to be, just like on the Fire TV, there's going to be a couple dozen, a few dozen really good games, and then that's it. They're going to be relying on people just bringing over Android apps that don't use the dynamic perspective. And, you know, that's not really within Amazon's control. If they really don't want to bring over their app and change it, then they don't have to. But,
and unless you sell 20 million Amazon Fire Phones, there's no incentive.
Right, which I don't think that the Fire Phone changes, you know, whether or not developers are going to be interested in the Amazon App Store. If they were looking for the bulk of devices, they're creating tablet apps for the Kindle Fire right now. The Fire Phone's not going to change the number of Fire OS devices by any considerable amount at all, being on one carrier in one country at the same price as every other flagship phone.
And there, that's something we haven't talked about yet, but we need to, is the price.
Yes. Yeah, $199, so $299.
And then $649, $749.
I mean, that's normal smartphone pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little less, you know, but whatever.
At this point, with offerings I've seen from Motorola and from LG and from Google, I'm not paying normal smartphone pricing for a phone anymore, ever again. And I don't think Amazon really thought hard enough there. And I'm not complaining. I know that phone cost as much to build as the Galaxy S4 did or whatever. But there are options now for people that only want to spend $250 on a really good phone, and Amazon just blew by that by $500.
Yeah, I think that they went with this whole thing where they said, so we're going to give you a 32 gig phone for $199. Where that's where everybody else gives you a 16 gig phone. I feel like the conversation may have changed a little bit if they had just done the 16 gig model and gone $79 or $99 on contract and like $500 off contract or something like that. Then there would have been some kind of differentiation. But the feeling that I got talking to people was, hey, this is our first phone from Amazon. We needed a carrier partner. AT&T was interested in it, and we just don't have a lot of wiggle room. You know,
nope.
Up to this point, Amazon's only been a partner with AT&T for the latest Kindle Fire LTE, where they've just had specialized data plans. You know, now the ball is a little more in AT&T's court, and you know, Amazon didn't really have the clout apparently to do something a little more specialized. You know, they're giving away a year of Amazon Prime. That's something on their end, but they couldn't pull off anything on the AT&T end. They had Ralph De La Vega from AT&T out, the CEO of AT&T Mobile. And he just said, oh, it's $0 down on AT&T Next, and you got a fantastic LTE experience.
Just like any other phone. I mean, exactly. I think it's important to at least mention, I mean, they had to do something with a carrier, right? How many people buy a smartphone without ever touching it? With the exception of maybe the iPhone, I don't think there's really that many other that, I mean, certainly on the Android side, you know, go all the way back to the original Nexus One when Google said, we're going to sell you this phone, and no, you can't actually use it anywhere first. And oh, wait, that didn't work at all.
And I think that, we'll get more into similar stuff that with the T-Mobile talked about later as far as trying a phone before you buy it. But everybody kind of went out of control a little bit, thinking that, oh, they would just go with the Kindle Fire and the Kindle model where they just sell them online and people would just buy them. You know, it's a different level when you're talking about a phone. And just because Amazon has an unlocked phone store where it sells phones doesn't mean that it would ever think that it could start selling its own phone. I mean, if Amazon sold the Fire phone directly, how much cheaper do you really think it would be unlocked? Maybe $100 less?
In 3 months, I'm thinking it's going to be $299.
Yeah.
Well, I could see that. But at launch, I don't think that the phone would just, you know, would be $400 unlocked if Amazon didn't partner with AT&T. I mean, I still think it's an expensive bill of materials on the device, and they really wouldn't sell any selling it directly.
And again, I love the idea of unlocked, you know, devices. I love the idea of even more expensive unlocked devices. I think getting off the carrier subsidy plan is a good thing. I think unlocked devices is a good thing. I think it's really tough to do in the U.S. still, and I wish it wasn't. I wish Amazon had found a way to do it, but I get why they had to partner up with somebody, and I get that it was AT&T. I mean, AT&T has a track record of doing this, right? They've done the two Facebook phones that went nowhere. And you know, the question I keep asking myself is this going to be another one?
The reason everybody wants to know, why not Verizon? Amazon can build a phone that works everywhere in the world and release it on AT&T. Yep. That's why not Verizon.
I mean, say it again. You will never get that sort of GSM unlocked whatever on Verizon. Ever. Ever. Ever.
Right. People don't realize there are three models of iPhones needed to work around the world because you include Verizon and Sprint and then niche countries that have weird bands. Amazon's not going to do that.
Yeah.
They just can't, not on their first phone.
So presumably they could open it up later on. And of course, AT&T also is going to offer, you know, international roaming packages and stuff like that for the phone. So, and we know based on the specs of the phone that has all kinds of crazy bands, you know, this isn't a special made phone that only has, you know, four bands for AT&T. You know, this isn't necessarily that.
Ever.
Were you able to track down anybody that would tell you that, yes, every band supported by this hardware is actually turned on?
No, they didn't want to talk about that, mostly because AT&T doesn't want them to talk about that. It also, I mean, the phone comes with a SIM installed in it. I mean, it has a SIM slot, but it, you know, every phone is shipping with an AT&T SIM already inside it. It's meant to be an AT&T phone. We just know based on the hardware specs, obviously, it can, you know, it's a Snapdragon 800 and a Qualcomm radio. It's ready for all of that. I wouldn't count on AT&T ever giving you an unlock code for it or letting you buy it full price and getting unlock code, sadly. But in these kind of specific cases, I don't think that that's crazy to think.
Ever. Ever on Verizon. Never. Never.
So...
I do want to talk about just the blanket specs real quick, because the nerds out there are yelling. I can hear them now. Why won't they just tell me how much RAM it has? How much RAM does it have?
2 gigabytes.
2 gigabytes. I saw somebody the other, I forget what post, I think it was an LG G3 post. They're like, screw it, I'm not getting it if it doesn't have 3 gigabytes of RAM. 2 gigabytes is so, like, a month ago. How did it feel? Was it running okay?
It felt smooth to me. The only extra little jitter that you got was, like I said, from the phone not tracking your face properly, which gives you the thought that it's not moving smoothly. When in reality, if you don't use any of that stuff, swiping around, switching apps, using all the interface elements, browsing, everything was completely fast. Some people were saying it looks slow or laggy. I'm not sure if you were watching the same video or what, but it's extremely smooth. You may not like the design of the interface, which is very alien to any other, you know, paradigm of using a phone with this, you know, the big carousel in top and then the app drawer being separate and the lock screen being different, but it's definitely not laggy or anything like that. And I would sure hope not with a Snapdragon 800 and 2 gigs of RAM, only pushing a 720p display.
Well, I mean,
that's a lot of overkill.
Those are half the specs right there. Yeah, Snapdragon 800, 2.2 gigahertz, 4.7-inch display. How was the display? Good?
The display was average. They talked about it being extra bright. I didn't get to use one outside, I guess for fear that I would sprint away with it or something. But they talked about 590 nits of brightness when you're outside, which is kind of crazy. And then a circular polarized filter so that you can use it with sunglasses on in portrait or landscape, which is something that you run into in Seattle about 4 times a year. But something that, you know, people in other places to use their phone with sunglasses on, that makes sense.
Every day.
13 megapixel camera with OIS. I didn't get to take too many pictures or, of course, offload them onto my computer and look at them. But, you know, Jeff seemed to think that they take better pictures than the iPhone or the Galaxy S5. So, of course, he's going to say that, though.
My other big question is going to be battery, especially with all this 3D crap it's doing all the time, right? 2400 milliamp hour battery. That. Yeah. 720p display, though. That was the big question we have, because they just said HD, which doesn't really mean anything to me anymore.
Usually they say HD because they can't say 1080.
Oh, right. I'm supposed to verify there is no SD card slot, correct?
Correct. The back panel doesn't come off, and there's a nano SIM slot on the side, so unless they're hiding it somewhere.
We need to start saying there is no SD card slot.
No SD card slot.
Just but leaving that
32
off.
Gigs. 32 gigs by default, which is nice. It also has stereo speakers on the top and bottom, so whenever you're holding it in landscape to watch a video or something, you have top and bottom, or I guess that's left and right once you go landscape. It's a little thick and heavy. It's kind of interesting. The bezels are pretty large because it has to accommodate those four cameras and IR lights and one in each corner. So it's actually almost the same size as the Nexus 5's footprint. I have one picture in my hands on of them sitting side by side. So it's a 4.7-inch screen, thicker than Nexus 5, and almost the same size diagonally. So it is, and it has glass on both sides. So it's definitely a hefty phone, but it feels good in the hand at least. And it kind of makes sense, you know, when you have all those cameras everywhere, you need to put them somewhere.
I want to do some Q&A questions on Amazon, and then we got to move off it onto other things.
Sure.
But if, you know, obviously, if you want anything more on Samsung, on Amazon, we're going to have just a whole bunch of links in the show notes. So feel free to go through there. Devin has a question. Guys, do you think the Fire Phone is targeted at women with a smaller display and a shopping focus? That points to yes. I don't know if I'd go there.
I think that's being a little narrow-minded about it.
What, Jerry?
I would make the ugliest woman ever, and I shop.
Yeah.
So it was kind of odd because Jeff Bezos showed off the example of shopping for dresses on Amazon. Look, you can look at the front of the dress and the back of the dress. But when they're showing off the Firefly feature, they were showing, okay, you can shop for this camcorder or shop for this light bulb or this dishwasher soap or this package of crackers. Like, it, you could shop for anything with this. Amazon doesn't care who you are or what you're shopping for. If you're a man shopping for dresses or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's as long as you go to the Amazon store and buy it. And like I said, with the smaller screen, if they wanted to go with the smaller screen, they would have gone a lot smaller than 4.7. The phone is pretty large.
Carl has a two-word question. Prime data? ?
So that's kind of, we thought we would see some kind of special data plan or something like that. They didn't talk about that. They just said they're doing interesting stuff to save your data plan with Firefly, where if you take a picture, it'll only pull out the pieces that it knows it can analyze and then upload those to the cloud to be analyzed, so that instead of uploading a 2 megapixel or a 2 megabyte file every single time, you're uploading like 15 kilobytes instead. But that was just for Firefly. There's no talk about any kind of special, some apps use data, some apps don't count against your data cap. AT&T is going to charge you the same way that you would if you had an S5.
Speaking of Amazon Prime, though, you get a year free of Amazon Prime, and if you already have Prime, they will extend it by a year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
So I guess you think of that as $100 now, $90.
Here's a good one from Pablo. Does the Amazon phone have the Prime Video On Demand app?
Yes. So it has the new Prime Music app as well. And that was a kind of a cool thing with the Firefly. Again, it all kind of comes through that, where you can point it at TV or movie that's going on. It'll recognize the scene in the movie or the TV show, and it'll take you to the Prime Video app where you can start watching from that exact scene and then give you all the information on the characters and everything. It's kind of interesting.
I'm going to make a prediction that somebody will get those apps off of that phone and make them run on any Android phone, and then Amazon will go back to DRM and never, ever, ever release a Prime Video streaming app for Android because of it.
I could see, well, I could see them never releasing a Prime Video app.
Yeah, and that was the question I was going to go to next. Ryan wants to know if Amazon will ever bring one to Android, and my answer is yes, they just did on the Amazon phone.
Yeah, they talked a lot about that stuff. They released this dynamic perception SDK and the Firefly SDK for you to create apps that plug into both of those. And the VP of software talked about how it was not changing dynamically how the Android apps worked. It was just another hook into an SDK. You build your app the same way. So the apps aren't any different, really. They just have a couple hooks into Amazon's SDK rather than plugging into something else on the Google side. So I mean, they just did make that Android app. It's just not coming to Google Play.
Here's one, a Q&A I want to answer, Phil.
Yes.
Brian, I lost it now. Doggone it, I lost it.
I know that happens.
I was reading. Somebody, and I apologize because I didn't remember your name, wants to know why did they put Gorilla Glass on both sides, knowing how bad glass on the back worked out for Apple. I thought glass on the back worked out really well for Apple. They sold, 90 million iPhone 4s and 4s's?
Yeah, and they didn't use Gorilla Glass on the back of the iPhone either.
And, the 10,000 that broke you read about on the internet compared to the 90 million that they sold, I think it worked really well.
And I still loved it on the Nexus 4 and the original Optimus. The LGG.
We freak out because we read the horror stories on the internet. But
right, that's minority.
When one guy writes something on the internet, there's 24 million that didn't write anything on the internet and are happy with the glass back on their iPhone 4 or 4S.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just think it's a materials choice. It's just another choice. It's going to get a little scratched up, but the back of your plastic phone gets a little scratched up too. But this one feels really nice in the meantime.
By the way, we're going long today. I'm declaring it right now. There's just no way we can't.
I mean, it's a bit of a disservice to just give 10 minutes on Amazon and toss it out the window. So exactly. I agree.
Screw it. It's Thursday. We can go as long as we want.
We could go all the way to Friday.
We could. I still threaten to do that every now and then. We got to do some sort of charity, 24-hour podcast.
I think Sean has an interesting Amazon jumping off point. Do you think that Fire OS will be our official fourth major mobile OS now that Fire Phone is out? I say fourth since BlackBerry is, for the most part, almost a non-player in the U.S.
That's a good question.
If you're talking about the U.S., I think you can say yes.
Well, that's all you're talking about because you can't buy these anywhere else.
Well, you can buy the Kindle Fires outside of the U.S., but not really, not very widely. Yeah. So if you're talking outside of the U.S., they just don't sell them. But in the U.S., I mean, if you count the Kindle Fire tablets, obviously, I think you're talking about a fourth place possibility.
I was going back and finding it real quick. BlackBerry's earnings came out today since they were asking. During the first quarter, approximately 2.6 million BlackBerry smartphones were sold through to end customers. That's globally. That's 2.5 days worth of Android devices.
How many of those were BB7? Did it break it out?
I'll have to look.
I bet a majority.
Probably, yeah.
No, that's for another podcast.
No, it is. It's interesting in the context.
It's relevant to this question.
Yeah, it's interesting in the context of that question. Well, already getting emails. Why are you guys so mean to BlackBerry again?
As far as the question itself about being the fourth major player, there is the chance that it's going to be that Palm tablet where there's going to be more of them out there that have been switched over to Android proper than ones that run the original software. We're making predictions, but they're just predictions. We have no idea how this thing's going to sell. Yeah. We just have a best guess.
Well, and we can't get it for another month too. So July 25th, you can pre-order it now. We've got links in the show notes. I've got one up on pre-order. So we're giving one away too, by the way. So there's a contest linked in there.
I'll be interested to see, what people think about it after using it, for a week a week on end of getting used to all the 3D stuff? You know, is it just going to make you, you know, throw up while you're walking down the sidewalk, or is it going to be actually useful?
There's a question. Are you going to get dizzy using this thing?
I didn't in my 20 minutes with it, but
the same people who legitimately got sick from iOS 7, mm-hmm. You know, not the millions that faked it and just wanted to troll on the internet, but the people that legitimately did probably will not like this dynamic perspective very much, but you can't please everybody. And hopefully it's easy enough to shut off.
Yeah. They said, like I said, they everything can be done with touch if you want it to be done with touch instead. And they of course noted accessibility issues, especially, you know, if you can't turn your wrist like that properly to be able to look at things, you've got to be able to turn that off. So I'm glad they recognize that.
If you hear all those dings going on, it's because the England game is on right now and Alex is letting us know the score, which is probably why he's not on the podcast. He didn't officially announce it, but sorry, man.
I've got two phones here that are absolutely muted, yet when Alex posts something, they make a noise. That's weird.
For England. Sorry, England. Look, I'm not going to say I told you so, but it's England in the World Cup. It never ends well. At least it hasn't ended well in a long time. And I like England. I love all those players. I love watching Rooney. But, yeah, it's England in the World Cup.
Especially when he's skying corners into the stands.
We should just talk about the World Cup for the rest of the podcast. I like doing it just because it drives non-soccer people crazy.
Oh, one more thing I was going to note about the Fire Phone, since we're just going to move on to World Cup. they are going to have accessories for it. They talked about a lot of different cases they were going to do. A car dock was in the works, apparently, but since it's not coming out for another month, that's something they can drum up. They're including premium headphones in the box that are flat cable, non-tangle headphones. They do want to have a pipeline of those things going. Nothing about third-party accessories, though.
Fair enough. What should we do? I'll give you guys a choice. I'll let Jerry pick. Do we want to do T-Mobile now, or do we want to do an ad now?
Do an ad, because
I got to save my voice here for a second.
All right. Well, we're going to do something completely different from the fine folks at Squarespace this week. Squarespace recognizes that it is a funder of podcasts, both big and small, and us, too. They are at the forefront of helping this medium reach the next level. And they wanted to do something different. They wanted to do something fun. So Squarespace hired Jonathan Mann. He's the Song of Day guy. He's the creator of hits like A Duet with Siri, We've Got to Break Up. You've heard those. You've watched them. I'm sure you have. He's a huge fan of podcasting. He loves all the hosts of all the podcasts he listens to. I have to assume he's only talking about us when he says that. He not only loves Squarespace, but after the 1,000th time of hearing us read the same old ad, us again, me, right? He's like, no more, no, just no mas. So he did what any self-respecting musician would do, and he sang about it. So here you go. Sit back, relax. All the options you need to create a unique website. They're constantly improving the platform and the tools, and it's awesome. Squarespace, get started. So yeah, squarespace.com/android. How about that? How about that, boys and girls? Yes?
Sweet. No. How about that?
That's pretty cool. I liked it. Free trial, 10% off, squarespace.com/android. And actually, they put out some new themes this week, too, so I'm checking it out again. I need to update my blog. Aight. So, T-Mobile. Part two of Andrew's longest day ever in his home city.
At least this one is closer to my house, so it, you know, is easy for me to jump back and forth. But where do you want to start with that?
We had not one, but not, you know, we had two Un-Carrier events. So I guess start with the first one.
So they branded this as Un-Carrier 5.0,
right?
Fifth iteration. And then, so they're going to start allowing people to test drive their network 7 days free no deposit, nothing. It's not super interesting to Android users because they're partnering with Apple to give iPhones out for free for 7 days. And John Ledger answered a question at the end about that, and he basically said Apple kind of has an untapped market at T-Mobile because a lot of people still don't realize that T-Mobile carries the iPhone. So they're partnering with them, and Apple is providing all of the hardware. T-Mobile doesn't have to buy a bunch of phones to lend out. So presumably they could do the same thing with Samsung. If Samsung thought that they could sell more S5s on T-Mobile, they would provide a bunch. But basically, 7 days, you get a completely unlimited phone. They mail it to you. You drop it back off at a store. And then at that time, you can decide to use them or not use them. And there's no catch whatsoever to that. So that was really quick. And then they said, hey, we're just going to do Uncarrier 6.0 at the same time, because I guess, you know, the version numbers just don't make sense or matter anymore. And they're going to start allowing streaming music from 8 different apps, not count against your data cap on T-Mobile. So I think it was iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora.
You gonna get them all?
Rhapsody.
Keep going.
Spot. TuneIn Radio. Slacker.
Nope. Pandora, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Rhapsody, Spotify.
Oh, iTunes too.
Slacker, Milk, which is Samsung's, and
Milk, yeah.
Beatport, which I'd never heard
of. I got Beatport. I told you Beatport. Come on.
So yeah, I mean, missing is Google Play Music. Songza, another big one.
Mm-hmm.
What was the other one? Somebody else mentioned one.
So they said those six that they called out, or seven, including Milk, and then Beatport's not out yet. But those seven are 86% of streaming music traffic on their network. So they came up with those because those were the apps that they could figure out how to find how they're pulling in data and whitelist it. And then they are going to, every month-ish, or every 3 weeks, I think they said, they're going to let you vote on which new app you want to have included. So you can vote for Google Play Music or TuneIn Radio or whatever. And then they said within a month after that, they just figure it out, and then they whitelist it on the network, and then you can use it.
So, and rightfully so, our old pal Dieter Bohn asked in the Q&A, well, you know, isn't this against net neutrality? You're preferring one sort of traffic over another. And I'm back and forth on this a little bit, because it's not like they're making it faster than the other traffic. They're just not having it count against your data cap. My first question with that, though, is, well, what makes something a streaming music service? Because, you know, YouTube's going to do it, right? And it's essentially, people use it for streaming music service now.
You know, and it's only going to be a matter of time before somebody figures out how the whitelist works and then creates a proxy to put on your phone that just funnels all your traffic through that whitelist, and then all your data is free.
But ready that's for another, my IP addresses.
That's another thing that T-Mobile's going to have to deal with. And I kind of liked the answer to that question that Dieter brought up, which he basically said, John Ledger said, they're not paying us to give them preferential treatment, which is kind of where the big pain point usually is with AT&T sponsored data and things like that, where they've said, you know, Pandora could say, we're going to pay AT&T to have them, you know, eat the cost of the streaming music. T-Mobile is just eating the cost because they're saying our network has enough headroom that we can just use this and let this fly. And like Phil said, that it's not different priorities. It's not like your music is always going to be ahead of somebody else's YouTube video or something like that. It's just that it's not going to count against your data cap. So I'm kind of on the fence on it, leaning towards T-Mobile just doing something weird rather than nefarious.
So basically, Ledger stood up and opened up Animal Farm by George Orwell and read, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal. And then he closed the book and he sat back down. Because... Well,
It
absolutely destroys any idea of net neutrality. 100% destroys it.
Well, it's billing.
Spotify if data from Spotify is treated differently than data from Pornhub, net neutrality has just went out the freaking window.
Is the data being treated differently, or is it just being billed differently?
When it does,
it's billing neutrality is what it is.
One at a time.
When it doesn't count against your data cap, it's being treated differently.
I think his second part of the answer was, and in the end, if you want to use as much data as you want, pay us $80 a month and you can use as much data as you want from any app from anywhere. It doesn't matter what it is. So that's kind of his scapegoat in the end, is that, hey, you can pay us for a truly unlimited plan and you can use 400 gigs a month and it doesn't matter. This is for our lower plans.
I'm not going to beat a drum and start online petitions and carry on, because quite frankly, this is pretty benign, and I think net neutrality the way we want it to be is dead, and there's nothing we can do to fix it. And if somebody is going to break the ideas that we want not broken, this is a benign way to do it. And people say, well, what about the startups? Well, if you've got $6, $7, $8, $10 billion, whatever it's going to cost to get, you know, contracts with Sony Music or BMG, you probably have some funding somewhere, so you're not just this little poor startup from your garage. But yeah, I mean, it's black and white. This breaks net neutrality. I like John Ledger. I think he's hilarious. He's witty. I like to watch him. But he can't try to tell me that this doesn't break net neutrality, because it does.
I think that his basic standing on it is that the customers are still paying what they would pay. So you still have to pay Spotify the exact same amount. T-Mobile has no deal with anybody. And what they said is, you know, what they say and what they do could be different things. What they say is, we would prefer, if possible, to just give you some kind of option in your account settings where you could choose a couple of apps. You know, you could choose set number of apps to not count against your data cap. You know, that's what they want to be able to do, but they're having trouble doing the whitelisting on such a dynamic basis for every single account, that they're just starting with this music freedom where they give you 6, 8, 10 apps that don't count against it. And they obviously looked at the numbers, saw that people like to stream music, obviously, but it's not, you know, this isn't half of data traffic on T-Mobile. They would never do it with something that's going to negatively affect their network. So it's kind of like, it's a good PR move simply because they have the network headroom to let this happen.
I really think that it's going to be that more than anything else. I would be curious to see what percentage of T-Mobile customers actually get anywhere near their data caps. It's going to be the
I don't think they do anyways.
Yeah. It's going to be the outspoken nerds who are going to, you know, blow by it no matter what.
And those outspoken nerds all have unlimited data.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's part of being an outspoken nerd, is you pay the extra $21 a month to T-Mobile, and then you can use 50 gigs a month if you want.
Right, and that's in the end. If you want everything, if you want to never turn Wi-Fi on your phone, just pay T-Mobile $80 a month, and they'll just let it happen.
I know, as soon as he announced it, and as soon as Dieter asked that question, I knew. If this were an AT&T or a Verizon event, the internet would be completely different in their judgment of if this is a good thing or not. If AT&T said they were going to have select music streaming services not count against your data cap, the cries of net neutrality would have been everywhere.
I think it's just, the only reason why I don't have a problem with it is Rhapsody and iTunes Radio aren't paying T-Mobile to make it free. It's just T-Mobile handling on the network side saying these are free.
And Spotify sits at the sidelines and says, we don't even get to pay to make ours free. We're screwed. Thanks.
Right. Spotify just has to start a campaign to have customers who use Spotify vote, and then it'll be turned on a month later, presumably. That's the only reason that people aren't completely outraged, I think. And on top of, like you said, people are predisposed to hate AT&T.
Why are we saying that Spotify's on the list?
Okay,
just checking. Spotify is on the list, boys and girls. Don't email me.
A list of evil.
Again, Pandora, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Rhapsody, Spotify, Slacker, Milk, and Beatport.
And they also launched their own rebranded version of Rhapsody Unmusic or whatever they call it, where it's $4 a month for any T-Mobile subscriber, or it's free for completely unlimited $80 subscribers. And it's the same. It's just the same thing as Rhapsody, but it's the same thing as the Rhapsody paid service, but it's just T-Mobile branded.
I know nothing about Beatport. I mean, I'm just looking for it in Google Play right now. Is it an iOS app?
It's a house music sharing kind of thing.
I mean, I see two apps. One says unofficial.
Yeah, it's not available yet, apparently.
Well, I mean, here's another one. I don't know if it's official or not, but it's only between 5,000 and 10,000 installs, and the reviews are not good.
Install it.
No.
Oh,
no.
Man. It's free?
And doesn't count against my data.
Oh, one thing real quick, before we get too far away from it. A lot of people fussing and complaining that it's iPhone only for this T-Mobile test drive. Mm-hmm. I just saw a chart recently, and I don't know where, so I'm not going to say that it's word of law, but like 78% of T-Mobile customers use an Android phone. T-Mobile doesn't need to find more Android customers. That's why they were more than, you know, they wanted to partner with Apple.
And they were very upfront about that. There's some crazy surveys they talked about where like half of people surveyed think that T-Mobile doesn't carry the iPhone. And so Apple is providing these phones. They're providing a bunch of brand new phones to T-Mobile just to land out. And they said they expect to have 1 million test drives in the next year.
And the way I see it, if you're an Android fan and you wanted to switch to T-Mobile, now you can try an iPhone for a week, too, and see what you're missing or what you're not missing. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of your week, you can go back and buy an Android phone on T-Mobile.
And they said that T-Mobile customers can test drive as well. So you can already have an account, and they can let you test drive another phone. So if you have another phone, they said if you have an iPhone 4S and you want to try a 5S on T-Mobile, then you can just do that. Or if you have a Galaxy S4 and you want to see what it's like, it makes no bearing on your current plan.
That could be really good for retention. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they said, we understand that the network is not everywhere, so I want you to try it because, you know, things have changed in the last year, and a lot of things that you're hearing about the terrible network are maybe a little old, so come try it. And then they'll let you test drive once a year, actually. So they won't let you go test drive, you know, every 3 months, but once a year.
Sorry, go ahead.
My biggest unanswered question from the event is at one point, a gentleman from Tri-Cities, Washington, who was a small business owner, had some very good questions about business plans. And in the end, John Legere gave him his own iPhone 5S and said, here, now you can test drive. Did that gentleman get on Twitter with John Legere's name and just say all kind of crazy random stuff?
Oh, so so Mike Sievert answered that one better than John did, when he was like, you know, just doing his thing of handing people iPhones. So Mike, I think he's the COO. Anyways, Mike Sievert, he's always up there. He's the one with the glasses that you always see. He said that the test drive program is a little different. It's not as commercialized for businesses. You can get three phones and you get them for 2 weeks. You can go sign up from the same page and you get contacted directly by a business representative that will hand deliver three phones, and you get to have them for 2 weeks, and then they come pick them up personally as well. So you don't just get them mailed and you don't have to drive back to a T-Mobile store. So they will drive out to the Tri-Cities and hand you three phones.
By the way, did you see John Legere this afternoon? I guess it was a couple hours ago. He tweeted, I know I have an R-rated vocabulary, but even I can go too far. Sincere apologies to anyone offended last night.
Yeah, he might have stepped on a couple of lines, might have been a little heavy, but you know, the rest was par for the course for him.
Well, I mean, Jesus, he was making fun of Ralph De La Vega's weight a couple events ago. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah,
he took a couple subtle jabs at Amazon but nothing personal against Jeff Bezos.
Must have been some.
He didn't say anything last night that I haven't said.
Well, that's true, but
I thought it was pretty tame.
You also don't run T-Mobile.
But I agree. So a couple of the things he said in other events, I think, crossed the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Last night, him expressing his displeasure with Verizon and AT&T with the F word doesn't surprise me at all. I figure that's something that he should say to just be John Ledger.
Voice over LTE?
Two new devices and a dozen new cities.
What was the other one?
The G Flex already got it.
Yeah, yeah.
So one S5 and Note 3 now.
Yeah.
Or no.
S5 is the new one.
S5 is the new one, yeah.
So that's getting its update today. Whole bunch of new cities. Are you ready for them?
Ready.
Are you ready? Atlanta, ready. Austin, Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Houston, Long Island, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Seattle, and Washington. New Jersey is not a city. I'm very aware of that, so don't email me. And wideband LTE in Atlanta, Birmingham, Columbus, Dallas, Detroit, Honolulu, Houston, Jacksonville, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Mobile, Orlando. Oh, couldn't do it all in one breath. Portland, Seattle, Tampa, and upstate New York.
So they said wideband, they consider anything 15 megahertz by 15 megahertz and higher.
Right.
They've been testing that locally. It's fast. It's real fast. I'm curious
how it is in Seattle.
I'm curious how it's going to be in a populated place, because I know one spot where they're testing it around here, and it's just not populated.
Mobile is the next town over from me.
If you were... Do what?
Mobile is the next town over from me. I might have to take a road trip.
If you were on any of those cities that Phil listed, your internet through T-Mobile is probably going to be screwed for a couple days. Don't be alarmed.
Mm-hmm. Then after that, you'll probably get upwards of 80-plus megabits a second on the...
They're tweaking lots of stuff. I know several people from D.C. have contacted me. Why did T-Mobile get so slow today? It went from 20 megabits a second down to 1. Well, they're working on the network.
So that's network upgrades there was good.
Anything else from T-Mobile?
I think that was it from them.
Let's look at some Q&A, because I saw some questions.
Wait, goodie bag. Andrew, what was in the goodie bag? That blew up last night after he said there would be some illicit substance for 48
He made a joke about it, but it was really odd. It was there was an energy drink, a power bar, a 5-hour energy that was a pink T-Mobile 5-hour energy, then like hand sanitizer, Listerine, and chapstick, and then a bag of M&Ms. So it was really, kind of an odd combination to have in there.
There really was no marijuana in there, people.
No, not as far, not in my bag anyways. Somebody might have sniped it before I got to the table and got one. But that was for the press too. I don't know. They had a couple thousand T-Mobile employees there actually. So it was like 50 press and then like a couple thousand T-Mobile employees all around from Western Washington.
Well, that's good, because cool. I heard a lot of like screaming and cheering, and
it was absolutely, it was so loud when John came out. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, throw a bone to the people that work hard for you.
Oh, sure. Glad to see absolutely.
Mm-hmm. More parties for your employees, T-Mobile, lots more.
Yeah, they treated everybody well.
Similar questions for Matt and Sam. Do you think the Nexus 5 will get voice over LTE?
It's not. Is it capable of it?
I don't know, but even if it is, why would T-Mobile want to make a phone they make zero money on as good as phones they make lots of money on?
Well, and the thing is, all of these voice over LTE updates have been, they've been requiring updates to the firmware of these T-Mobile devices. I mean, they would have to get with Google to release an update for the Nexus 5.
Well, I mean, the firmware could be capable now. I haven't checked. I'm sure somebody will quickly let me know if it is or not. That's your clue, guys. But I just don't see T-Mobile's, why would they want the Nexus 5 to have a service that they can offer on the Galaxy S5 that they actually sell on their Jump program and make money from you every month?
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like Wi-Fi calling. It's a situation where T-Mobile can control the whole experience with devices that they sell, and they don't want it to get wonky. It's already kind of weird that they sell the Nexus 5 just with a SIM, and they provide support for something that they don't control. So it's not at all surprising that they wouldn't partner with Google to try to get a voiceover LTE update going on that. And for now, what you don't really need it. So they already do different wideband audio things. You don't need voiceover LTE other than not dropping to HSPA Plus when you make a phone call for using data.
John asks, what do you think John Leisure will do with himself if the possible Sprint T-Mobile buyout goes through, besides having to replace his entire wardrobe of pink T-Mobile shirts?
So that's kind of been the interesting thing. He of course, got the obligatory, what happens if the merger goes through, the rumored merger goes through, and he said, obviously can't say anything about that, but no matter what happens, all that he cares about is that the T-Mobile idea and the brand and the consumer first attitude continues on, which is basically what any CEO of a company is going to say when asked about things he can't talk about.
I don't think that type of merger would get any regulatory approval. That's my honest opinion.
No, I agree.
But as things progress and as things move on, if it happens, I see SoftBank throwing the Sprint name away and making it all called T-Mobile with the John Legere pony show at the helm so everybody can cheer and love it.
The rumors have basically been that it's either going to be branded as T-Mobile US and they kill Sprint name, or they bring in a new brand, SoftBank USA, and in either way, John Leisure runs the show either way, which kind of makes sense. He's got some momentum going for him, and Dan Hesse has momentum going in the opposite direction.
I have a friend whose last name is Legere, and it's spelled the same way, and I just interchanged it a little.
Fine, you're off the hook. More new net neutrality questions, but we think we kind of answered that. Pablo wants to know, what could T-Mobile have up its sleeve for Uncarrier 7? It throws a phone at each and every one of us, hits us in the head, and then hands us money.
Well, then Carly comes and fixes the boo-boo. That part out. I miss Carly.
They had, somebody had some rumors that they were going to start including taxes and fees in your price plan like prepaid carriers do. That would be kind of cool. No inkling of that last night. I couldn't imagine what else they could do other than just keep upping data caps or eliminating them, or, you know, more innovative ways to get you to buy phones faster, which is basically what they want.
Billy says, it's huge that T-Mobile declared last night they were first and foremost a data provider. Was that them basically admitting to being a true dumb pipe? If so, it's the first time a carrier has admitted that. Maybe a little bit.
Yep.
I didn't think about it like that at the time, but it kind of makes sense that that's kind of a continuation of them separating the plan and the phone subsidy at first, you know. They still have to go a step further and let you buy a SIM and not care if you take a phone SIM and stick it in a Nexus 7 and use data, or take a Nexus 7 SIM and put it in a phone and only use data. They still have a lot of restrictions on that. They have restrictions on hotspot. You know, there's a lot of stuff they have to continue to do, but that's a good good thought.
Now we have it on record where John Leisure has said we are basically just a dumb pipe and a data provider. And, you know, now we can ask those questions. Well, then why do I have to buy a tethering package if I have an unlimited data plan? And we can expect answers. We could always ask the questions, but now you can actually expect an answer that you probably won't get.
Well, it plays to T-Mobile's strengths. I mean, it's just like this free music thing. They have a lot of spectrum and a lot of big markets, and it plays to their strength to say we have the fastest data network, because in a lot of places they really do. So it plays to their strength to not talk about coverage maps. They talked a lot about not looking at these stupid 2D maps that show voice coverage as complete coverage, because nobody really cares about that. A lot of people think if you're out in a place where you can't make a voice call, or you can only make a voice call, that's not really super useful, because you can't, you know, you can't use Google Maps to get home on a voice call kind of thing. So he kind of talked about making it 3D maps, you know, how dense is your coverage in places rather than does a cell tower reach there?
We could look at them on the Amazon Fire Phone and turn it a little bit. It would be real 3D.
T-Mobile's probably not interested in releasing that app for a
AT&T. Real quick, that points back to this streaming music thing. Net neutrality question aside, T-Mobile has tons of bandwidth and spectrum that they're not using. Now they can use it for something. And using it for something is always better than it just sitting there being unused because X amount of the population in X city doesn't use T-Mobile and it's just there.
Yeah, the FCC has a problem with you going to buy more spectrum when you're not currently using spectrum that you have. And we saw that with AT&T and Verizon both fighting about not being able to buy more spectrum, even though they're not using all of theirs. So if T-Mobile can push wideband LTE to all these places and let people use 100% more data than an entire Sprint family plan, you know, that's good for them because then they can say, hey, look, we're using all of this spectrum. We need more.
All right, I'm done with T-Mo.
Me too.
I mean, not like done, just for today.
Oh, damn, I already cut my SIM card in half.
What do you want to do next? Some random stuff, or you want to talk I.O.? I.O. is next week, Google's developer conference. I guess we're going to talk about I.O. right now.
Yeah, if we don't, we'll forget.
There was a question about the Nexus Q. That's a good jump-off point for I.O., right?
Oh, fine. Phil, do you still use the Nexus Q, or is it a pretty decorative sphere in your office at this point? Which side is it? It's that side. There it is. Right there.
It's mostly been a decorative sphere since it came out.
Well, yes.
But you can't use it. The app doesn't work anymore.
Oh, that's true.
I have it. I install it on every phone. I'm not going to lie, because it's still in my list. And every time I open it, I cry because it just doesn't work. And I have this beautiful orb that I could do something with.
So, yeah, Google I.O. I mean, not a lot, I think, has changed since last week. I said basically every leak we've seen so far is kind of random expected feature to be announced at Google I.O. Android TV is coming. I mean, that's kind of obvious at this point. What was the other stuff? I still want to see car stuff, and I think there was a story this week saying Google could show off some sort of car home competitor app next week, which again would make sense since they announced the automotive, what is it, Android Open Automotive
thing? Open Automotive Alliance.
Way back when now, again, we've seen alliances die on the vine before, but I don't think they can let this one go, right?
I will tell you, if you go to the Google I.O. page on the internet and look through the developer sessions, they are a huge hint on a couple things you're going to see. There has to be a reason that Google is having NVIDIA-hosted developer sessions about the Tegra K1, which is their new processor that is not in any Android devices yet.
Mm-hmm. And at the GPU Tech Conf, they talked a lot, NVIDIA did, talked a lot about what it can enable for cars and self-driving cars and nav systems and everything. You know, you could use one Tegra K1 chip to run the self-driving car and then just have another one for the dashboard systems and you're done. You just have two simple processors and there you go.
And go back to CES. That was a big point of NVIDIA's press conference was Tegra and moving into K1, powering all this automotive stuff. What's in the Tango tablet in the weird three-dimensional?
That would be the Tegra K1.
K1, there you go. So, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, know what I mean.
But, they've also got Intel there giving talks about graphics processing. Mm-hmm. So, if you follow that logic, that means we'll see something from Intel, too. But it really struck me is they're specifically telling you how to get Android to perform well on the K1 processor, and there are no Android devices of any sort that use the K1 processor in the wild. So cars, other things that may use the K1 processor, we're going to see something. We're going to see hardware on some level.
Jerry, other big question, and there are a lot of questions in the Q&A here about it. I don't know if I'm going to go through them all, but art and I saw, you know, people are noticing all these commits that have been deleted for Dalvik in AOSP. I mean, look, we're not going to get to San Francisco next week, and Google's going to wave a magic wand, and suddenly all our phones are going to switch from Dalvik to Art, right?
No. I haven't really tried or played with on 4.4.3, but I'm hearing that, you know, Art is a little bit better. When Art originally debuted in the first version of KitKat, you know, it was just a placebo. Anything you heard about how great it was not true. It's wasn't a lie, but there just wasn't that major difference. And this comes right from the guys who wrote the software that know that they, people aren't really seeing that because that's not possible. But it has progressed. It's getting better because this is the future. They're going to change the way byte compiling works, and we're going to switch to Art, which should be much more efficient. And that's going to translate into faster and better performance. So it's getting better slowly. I think Alex was telling me on the G3, in a lot of places, it makes a difference in some of LG's software. So vendors are working with Art as well. And when we get the next major version of Android, that's where they may switch it over, and then they wave their magic wand and say, now everything is on the Art runtime. But no, we're not. The phone you have in your hand now is not going to be updated to Art only anytime soon.
And even then, it's up to, I mean, the manufacturers are going to have to do things,
yep,
you know, on their own time for a little while anyway, right?
Yes. It says, like I said, Alex said that it appears that LG is working with Art in major ways. I'm sure the same can be said for Samsung, HTC, Motorola, and the rest. We just noticed it with LG.
Right.
So, and that all has to happen before a magic switch gets flipped.
It's you know, I often use the ship metaphor. It's a big ship to turn, and Art's a pretty big change in direction.
Right, and I'm glad that they're going slow. Maybe it was a little unfair to tease it when KitKat first came out, and get people tantalized where this is what's coming, and you know, if you're really, really slick, you can use it now, but everything may not work. I kind of thought that was a little unfair, giving people higher hopes. But they've went slowly, and I think they've done it right, whereas when they do switch over, everything's going to be seamless and smooth.
I mean, it's not like it's a front-facing, you know, consumer-facing thing, though. It's buried in the developer settings. It's for nerds to play with and developers to work with.
And, you know, if nobody had mentioned it, it would have never left websites like Android Central or Google Plus.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's still the only place it's getting talked about, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, new designs, because Google redesigns Android all the time. I don't know why we're all pretending like this will be the first design of Android ever. In fact, if you haven't seen Rahman Amadeo's History of Android, basically, you know, this giant thing of screenshots and words, you know, it's really interesting to see where it's come from and where it is now. So, yeah, it's, you know, Google redesigns Android all the time. Let's not be surprised in 2014.
Did you not get the Google Plus update?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a new design language for apps that looked at what? Yes, yes.
I'm still pretty miffed that they introduced what we call the hamburger menu and encourage everybody to switch to it, and then they do away with it 9 months later.
Well, but they're not doing away with it. Not entirely. Well,
they're not using it.
Well, but yeah, I mean, yeah, we're going to have to see. But no, they're not completely doing away with it. Anything else IO related you can think of that you absolutely want to? You think there's going to be a surprise? I mean, Google Glass is the other thing everyone's know about, but I, you know, whatever.
I have a gut feeling that there's something that just, while it may have been leaked and we've probably talked about it, nobody really thinks it's going to be there. I have a gut feeling that they've been able to keep something mostly secret.
Yeah.
And I have no insider information on this. I have some information about what I'm pretty sure is going to be there, but I think that there's going to be a one more thing.
Hey, look how Chromecast snuck up on us last year.
Yep.
Yeah, I was caught off guard a little bit. We were like, oh, Nexus 7, cool, and then this other thing.
All right, let's blaze through this other stuff. Hey, the Galaxy S5 Prime is here, although I don't know what the hell Prime means. It's an LTE Advanced GS5 with the QHD display.
Prime means I can order my socks on Tuesday and they'll show up on Thursday and I don't have to pay shipping, right?
Different kind of Prime.
Oh.
I think we already talked about that kind for an hour. Yeah, I mean, it's a new variant for South Korea. I don't think I'd expect to see it anywhere else. Does that make it Prime? What is Prime? How do you define Prime?
As long as you don't try to buy the South Korean one and then use it here, I think you'd be all right.
Does it have an antenna?
Probably.
Most assuredly.
Hey, by the way, the LG G3 I've got, I need to send back, actually worked great in Chicago. Speaking of bands, didn't work well in New York at all. Chicago was awesome. Just saying. What else? Nokia launched a launcher today. One of those predictive launchers that looks at what you use and then puts it on the home screen. Hey, you know what I do? I take the launchers that I use and I put the apps on the home screen myself.
Mm-hmm.
Funny like that. I like the idea of these predictive launchers for like normal people who don't change their launch screen or their home screens.
But at the same time, some normal people are like, quit changing things on my phone. I'm already confused enough by my phone.
Yeah. And to be clear, this is the Nokia, the part of Nokia that wasn't bought by Microsoft. So, and it was interesting. It looks nice. It's worth trying. It's in beta right now. It's like pre-release beta. So it's kind of very alpha.
But they're going to just release it anyways.
HTC sold 50,000 HTC One E8s in China in 15 minutes.
That's amazing.
Jerry and I were talking about this. Was it yesterday when it came out? I mean, it's amazing, if only for the fact that that's how many people are in China, boys and girls.
Right.
And we tend to forget that over here.
But 50,000 of anything in 15 minutes, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't think we can quite get a grasp on what that is.
No, it's a big deal.
That's the way that Xiaomi does their flash sales. They tell everybody exactly what date and time and URL, and then they make 150,000 phones and they sell them in like an hour, and then they wait until they get another 100,000 phones and then sell them. And that's kind of the way it's done often over there, which is crazy.
Take note, OnePlus. Hey, speaking of OnePlus, we got a lot of grief over the weekend for that. That post, I guess some Oppo Mart or something was selling the OnePlus One, but it's the one with the Color OS and not CM on it and blah, 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 blah.
Which is the Chinese version.
Sure. And so a lot of people, this is a scam site, and this one site that says what scam sites are says it's a scam and blah, blah, blah. I can't tell you if it's a scam or not. All I can tell you is this. I sent them enough money for two phones and then changed my mind and they canceled it without a problem. So if that's a scam site,
I think a lot of this, people think it's a scam because things get lost in translation when you're buying, an auto-translated site and you don't understand what the specs are and what exactly you're getting, but you buy it anyways, and then it's not what you thought it was. That turns into a lot of scam reports because people want to get their money back.
Yeah. I mean, all I can say is I gave them money, I changed my mind, asked them to cancel it, and they canceled it. It doesn't get much easier than that. So
I think that the only thing that had to be said was they're not affiliated with Oppo or OnePlus.
Right. And that was the kind of confusing thing for us, I think. And, that happens when you start messing around with regions that you normally don't mess with. So I think we could have done a little better, but I don't think, we fell victim to some scam site. So
definitely.
Or advertised one.
Come to jerrymart.com and give me a credit card number. I'll show you his scam site.
Twitter has added native support for animated GIFs. I say GIFs because I want to, and I don't care.
And it's the proper pronunciation.
Nest Protect is back on sale for $100. They got rid of the wave thing, and they took it out of the app this week, by the way, too.
So you can't make a GIF of you waving at your Nest Protect?
I guess not. I mean, I could. It just won't do anything. So, all right. We've been going for an hour and a half now. Anything else you guys can think of? Anything else in the Q&A has popped up? Flipping through real quick. Boom sound / front-facing speakers on the fabled new Nexus tablet, asked Davin. I should certainly hope so. Listen to the sound of my voice. Listen to the sound of my voice. Wow, I just made myself dizzy doing what I did on video. See how I do that? I throw in certain things for the video crowd and some things for the audio crowd.
True performer.
Somebody, let me see. Robert, back to where we mentioned that Verizon will never make a
phone. Yes, I saw that one. That was a good question.
So what about the Droid DNA from Verizon? It doesn't have tons of LTE bands, but it's unlocked and has support for tons of GSM bands, US and international, but not all of them.
And we were kind of not on not in the same purpose, put it that way.
Right. Amazon made a phone that will work everywhere except Verizon and Sprint, basically. It'll work in Australia. It'll work in Indonesia. It'll work in England. It'll work in America. It'll work in Mexico. Whether it actually gets unlocked and able to work in any of these places is yet to be seen.
Then it's not just the DNA. It's a lot of phones. It's phones that Verizon wants to brand as being international roaming capable. And so they have the bands that work with their roaming partners.
Yeah.
And they work in places where a lot of people will go for business or vacation outside of the States, which makes sense. Verizon's doing it right, but they just can't do it all.
Bingo. All right, that's it. I'm sticking a very giant fork in this very giant podcast. I think an hour and a half before Google I.O. is probably worthy, because actually Jerry and I are probably going to do a podcast next Tuesday night, or Wednesday night. Wednesday night. Most likely. Knowing us.
It's Tuesday before I.O. and it'll be really boring and suck.
I think we did that one year, didn't we? Like, hey, we're here. Let's talk about what we think we're going to see. And they're like, now what?
And by the time everybody listens to it, they're like, you're so wrong. We just watched the keynote and you got none of your predictions.
I'm excited. So, you know what you do need to know is androidcentral.com/google-io. Or just make it all one word. I'll make it all go the same place. That's where in fact, it's live now and it looks really sexy. So androidcentral.com/google-io. We'll have all our stories there coming next week. We will be in San Francisco. It's going to be awesome. We will have all the stories and then some. Hey, we didn't mention watches, but I totally expect to see more Android Wear stuff, because there will be Android Wear stuff.
There's not really anything new on that front 1 week before I.O.
Yeah.
You super nerd types out there who like soldering irons and stuff.
Oh!
I hope that doesn't show up backwards on the camera.
No, it looks good.
Nope.
Jetson K1 for everybody listening at home. Go look it up. Hey, Jerry, I thought of you while I was at GoGo the other day, because we were in like the repair facility and there were guys with microscopes and soldering irons and a bunch of little, like, I guess, gold solder.
See, was there an empty chair?
Yeah, actually, there was.
See, next time I'm coming with you. And while you learn about the product, I'll just sit and pretend like I work for them and solder things.
There you go. All right. Well, we will do emails eventually, I promise. podcast@androidcentral.com if you have a pressing need. But we get so many good questions live. I kind of prefer to go through those first. But if you got something, can't make it live, I completely understand. So podcast@androidcentral.com. You can get us all on Twitter and Google Plus. Basically, just search our names. By all means, follow the site, Android Central. Even more important than following me, Phil Nickinson, @PhilNickinson. Follow me, please. I'm lonely. Hey, you remember my little Snapchat experiment last week?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I had a bunch of people actually send me. Let me see if there's one now. A bunch of people send me messages. I still don't entirely understand what it is I'm supposed to do with this. But, you know, they were cute. It was fun hearing from people. So if you want to do that again, just Phil Nickinson. It was all dudes, which is not surprising, but I'm just pointing that out.
Do you have a quick ratio of pictures of penises versus not pictures of penises?
Yes, it was 1 to the total number. Just one. And it wasn't even a real picture. It was just a drawing. So...
So that makes it even better. And I was hoping you hadn't got another one since then. So good job, internet.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, it kind of got some cool messages from people. I don't know that I would use it for my, like, main source of messaging, but, you know, I have a better understanding of what it is, so cool. And as we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. You can call them at 888-468-6158, or just go to that little website, shopandroid.com.
I've heard of that one.
Yes. Jerry,
get
Andrew,
a lot of new stuff.
Andrew, Jerry, we're going. We are done. We are sticking a fork in it. Next time you hear from us, we will be in San Francisco.
Say later.
Bye. Toodaloo.
See ya. That awesome episode of the Android Central podcast was brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and to get 10% off, visit squarespace.com/android and enter offer code Android at checkout. A better web starts with your website. All right, here we go.